to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Everyone, to another show at Intravenous, and we have two marvelous people joining me, the kind of co-host today, Pranjali Mann, and Robin, who is the OG host and the only host, and we love Robin. So hi, Robin.
And hello.
I also have another person in the room with me, who is
I'm Jasleen Mann. Hi there.
Yeah, so thank you for tuning in to Intravenous on this Wednesday morning. We are so excited to talk about a few different things, and I hope everybody's holidays things are going well. It hasn't snowed that bad on the Burnaby campus yet, so I'm guessing it's all good everywhere else too. So to get sort of started for the show, I pitched this idea to Robin to talk about what it means to gamify social media, and how does that kind of interaction change or not change, or sort of like mediate through when older adults interact with that kind of technology. So when I say older adults, I think I mean people who are like generally around above 55 or above 50 even. So depending on like how people would describe that age bracket, I would personally think that as like 55 to 75. So people who I think have seen the dawn of internet in its sort of like conception, also seen what personal computers meant and like how we have come to Apple and everything and like touch screens and all. So people who have sort of lived through different ebbs and flows of the sort of like personal computing technologies and like smartphones and such. And so I think there is something very interesting about the way in which these technologies are sort of like shaping our understanding of the world and like our interaction with events that happen all around us. And so, yeah, that is the kind of the topic. I would also like to pass it over to either Robin or Jasleen to sort of like briefly provide the context for the talk. Like, do you guys have any?
Yeah, I think if I start off talking about the interaction with technology in the form of phone. So I think my first phone, mobile phone that I bought was way back in 2001, and it did not have the camera. It was only a device for making long distance calls, and you had that handset in your hands, and it was something really new that you were not connected with a wire or a phone, that was at home only, and you can be moving with that phone to your workplace and talking to a person who is also at their own workplace and stuff like that. So that was the first interaction that I had in 2001 with my phone. And then came the inflow of phones and mobile phones from various companies. Then came the Nokia in India. So they were all growing as an industry, and we had all those features. Then the interaction started with the social media apps. For me, it was like Facebook that I started off, and WhatsApp. So Facebook was, I think I joined somewhere around 2009 or something. So that mm-hmm. was my first Facebook page that I created. And we have come a long way, in that technology interaction. So yeah, this is how it started for me.
Yeah. That just reminded me of like a report that I read like 2 years ago. So don't quote me on the exact details about the report. But I remember, like, when Facebook first came to, like, the quote-unquote Global South, a lot of the infrastructure that they were using was from, like, the sort of, like, cable companies. So they were, like, kind of, like, renewing that kind of infrastructure. So the villages and remote areas and all those, like, regions that were already, like, left out of, like, the cable revolution were also left out of the mobile revolution, because the kind of, like, always it has been, like, sort of like a trend within the introduction of, like, new technologies is that it follows a certain kind of pattern. And so, like, when we, like, start to think about, like, internet and, like, wireless iPads and stuff like that, like, Bluetooth and all those services too, I think they followed a similar kind of, like, pattern, the kind of digital divide that we call today followed the pattern of the divide that, like, cable television or radio or, like, even, like, paper mail kind of thing. So there has been, like, a sort of, like, a circular motion of going back to the starting point wherein people who are marginalized and who are left out of these, like, revolutionary and progressive like, infrastructure designs are left out all the time.
Yeah, I feel that Global South has always been slow in picking up, and the divide was always there, and it has it hasn't got better since then. Even the rural areas in India are still lacking in the same kind of facilities regarding the infrastructure. Mobiles are still, like, they are just like devices they have in their hands, and the connectivity is poor. So yeah, the divide is still there, and I feel it's gonna take a long time to bring that, narrow down that gap. I think Robin can pitch in some ideas about Canada. I'm not very sure how the divide is in here in Canada. The infrastructure, maybe, or the regional rural areas, how they span out in Canada. I'm not very sure about the regional areas.
I'm actually going to back it up a little bit and admit my ignorance, I guess, about the whole topic. and just, you know, it was interesting, Pranjali, when you pitched this idea to me and said, you know, let's talk about gamification and, you know, what the intersection of how it affects older adults and, you know, in particular, how there's a gender divide between the way it's used and, you know, who benefits and what are those benefits and all of that kind of stuff. I was like, gamification, what the heck is that? You know? And so it was actually a term that I needed to go to Google and look up, right? Because it doesn't exist in the Oxford Dictionary. You know, the old school paper dictionaries that we used to rely on back in the day. It's one of those terms that has come to us through technology and is related to our use of technology in terms of providing strategy to engage and motivate people. So it's got this functionality in a lot of ways, right? Where there's an approach to trying to enhance people's lives through the use of technology so that they can adapt and transfer knowledge, which I think is something that you were pointing to just now, Jasleen. You know, where, you know, through the use of, you know, first of all, the flip phone back in the day, right? And it allowed us to make long distance phone calls from you know, our van or you know, walking down the street with the limited kind of Wi-Fi networks that there were, all the way up to now, where we've got pretty much everything at our fingertips and allows us to stay or be in contact with people from all over the planet, really, as long as there's some kind of a network. And then, you know, to address the question of how does that work in context to the Canadian reality, I'm pretty certain that, you know, cell phones are more common than not in most people's households. And I would say that is probably 99% true in the urban context. But we still have a lot of people who live in the remote areas where, you know, especially Indigenous communities that are perhaps fly-in only, or, you know, up the winter road and, you know, there's no access in the summer other than to fly in or boat. Those communities might still lack a lot of access, as they lack a lot of access to a bunch of services that we enjoy in more urban settings, right? And I know even for myself, when I first moved to Vancouver 8 years ago and signed up for my new cell phone plan, I was with Freedom Mobile, and the coverage was sketchy. You know, there were pockets where all of a sudden I was out of range. And, you know, even sometimes when I'm up on the mountain at work, I don't get a signal or a very strong signal. And so, you know, just because we have access and we pay big money every month for these devices in our hands, they're not foolproof and they don't provide access to everybody 100% of the time. And maybe that's just because of my plan, but, you know, that's definitely been my experience, and I think that it's probably,
yeah. Also, I think I brought the question of access and infrastructure together, because I feel like when we talk about, like, at least in like a more like public discourse, we always tend to talk about the ways in which technology is helping us, quote unquote, to do certain things. And so, like, technology as being the progressive force is the discourse that I genuinely dislike, because, and so I think infrastructure and, like, drawing the connections between the ways in which marginalization works within the gambit of studying technology and its, like, sort of presence all everywhere, all over, is key. And I think gamification is one aspect of this way in which technologies become sort of like technologies for quote unquote good become harmful, because they are being created on this like platform or world stage which is very highly uneven. And so I think, yeah, that's why I like brought up the conversation. But gamification is also not my sort of like research strong suit at all. I just stumbled upon it while having some conversations at the research lab that I work at, and we always like have random conversations, and I was like, wow, gamification, isn't that gaming? Like, I don't do gaming. And the person was like, no, gamification is not about gaming or video games. It is something more.
So my understanding of this word is like, it's like an atmosphere or a world where certain behaviors are rewarded in some way or form. Maybe it starts with the likes on your pictures that you share on social media, or the videos or the reels that we post. and the number of followers. And I think the whole scenario has changed over the years. When I first started with Facebook, we were always like, whenever we posted something, we were waiting, yeah, who's going to like our pictures and something. Now we are being notified, even if we have not permitted and certain features that come up with these apps and social media platforms, is they have taken upon this, that they let us know that somebody has liked your picture or your reel has been played for so many times, and some other notifications, which is really funny for me, because they talk about, okay, it has been X number of days that you haven't posted something on your social media. So these kind of behaviors, they have become the part of this gamification process that we are talking about today. Mm-hmm. And it has changed the way we interact with these platforms. Mm-hmm. Definitely we are looking more towards how many likes we have on our pictures, or how many times it has been shared or reviewed. Mm-hmm. Rather than actually the people who we know and who has liked more than that, we are looking at the quantification of those likes and rewards. So that kind of industry has grown over the years.
Especially for me, as like as a sort of like a young adult as well, I use LinkedIn a lot, because I think it is sort of like a useful tool to see what kind of skills are necessary for the kind of industry that I'm interested in, and seeing like what other of my colleagues are doing and stuff like that. So on LinkedIn, you get like a weekly report of, or like a summary of like what kind of people reviewed your profile, which industries they belong to. And if you want to see which hiring companies exactly were those like people from, you have to unlock the kind of level. So it's very similar to this like video games, which me and my siblings falled into during COVID, because we were like, yeah, we're just going to do two things, watch movies and play video games. Like that was us. So I felt like, yeah, exactly. Like my interaction with the platform has been so gamified that there are levels to actually unlocking versions of LinkedIn, of Instagram, like the blue tick. Like if you get the blue tick, there are a certain range of things that you can do on that platform. And it's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what strikes me about this whole phenomenon of, you know, liking and, you know, being motivated by the response that this social media is providing to us, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's through likes or, you know, unlocking more material, or, you know, this idea of being rewarded somehow for the things that we're putting out there, right? The gender response to that is very different.
Absolutely.
You know, I think as, you know, human beings in the society where we live in, there's such a not enoughness going around in spades, regardless of the body that you live in. But I think that, you know, the idea of this affects young women in a particular manner, where they're going to strive to, you know, be and do and think in a certain way. And for older women, that visibility issue of, you know, needing to show up in either case as maybe not who we really are, you know, and the fact that we can design avatars so that we don't actually have to have our picture there, you know, and we can make ourselves, you know, look however we want to look. And, you know, there's this masking, this social masking, or this sort of social disguise that is allowable through social media that has never existed in the way that it does now, right? And that there's implications for who we think we are and what we think we can do. I think both in a positive way, but also in a negative way, because it's always that way. It's never, you know, it's never all good and all bad, but you know, that's the conversation that AI forces us to have, right? Is how do we use this tool that we have so that more people benefit from it in a positive manner than in a way that is, you know, deconstructing ourselves into such a way that we don't even exist to ourselves anymore.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you brought this up, because we have been talking about this over and over as a communication student. The thing about ageism and sexism, it's clearly evident on the platforms. There's no going back on this fact that there has been this gender divide, and between young and old female, the divide is also visible, because obviously the platforms, they are designed in a manner that people should be looking good and beautiful all the time. So all the tools, they are meant to poke women to look beautiful anyways. So I think this is part of ageism process that we see when we are interacting with these platforms. And somehow this is sad, because we have forgotten that this is again a type of stereotyping or discrimination that existed in the form of racism. This is kind of racism in relation to age, I may say that. Earlier it was like more prevalent in the society, in the physical world, and now it's visible on the platforms too. So this racism of age and color and everything, they have magnified because of social media. And it's disheartening. Although whenever new tools like AI or something that comes up, we are motivated to think positively about them, that they are going to benefit a lot of people. But as you mentioned, the life has become a farce, actually. It's all fake now. You really don't know that if you have those wrinkles on your face or you have used some tool to remove them to look good in your pictures. I must say that when I was sharing one of these pictures and that you have this thing on the Facebook, they poke you to make two pictures of yourself, then and now. So my then pictures, which were from the earlier years, they make me look older, because the cameras at that point of time, those pictures didn't have those tools, and they make me look younger right now with those tools. So this is surprising that I'm aging and I'm looking younger on these platforms. So I don't know, maybe some people may take it as a positivity, because you get those positive vibes, you feel young, but somehow it's a pressure on your mind to look in a certain way on these platforms. Mm-hmm. This is increasing day by day, I say.
Before I see your head shaking, Robin, before you say anything, I'm going to ask you, because I found it interesting. So you compared, so racism, sexism, and ageism, the three like sort of swords of intersectional quote-unquote punishment that people like Crenshaw talk about. Do you have an example of the sort of like celebrity culture stuff that sort of like showcases that?
Yeah, I think it's always prevalent, and we have seen it in the past years, and even in the U.S. elections. The way the male are treated is different, and the female is treated in a different manner. Women, I talk about this all the time. Women, they have a list of expectations that they have to go on with. A childless woman is treated, if a woman doesn't want to have children, she's treated in a different manner. And it's okay if a male says that I don't want to have kids in my future. So this discrimination about male, female, and older women and young women has been there for a long time, and it has increased with the social media gaze. And women of color have been specifically left out of this visibility or the attention economy. Very few women I have seen, and old women of color getting space. The only example that comes to my mind is of Oprah Winfrey, who have made a mark in the industry. So it's very difficult for women, old women, and women of color to make a place or a name for them in this celebrity culture that we have right now. And celebrity culture in itself is a derogatory term, I say, that comes with the rewards and the punishment of the people who are like left out in any case, in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, like, hyper visibility of like Black women, for example, like shadow banning is another term, I think, that comes to mind, is like certain creators are flagged and banned on these platforms because they are said to sort of like portray or are said to create content that is considered quote unquote harmful, but like harmful for who, for whom? And all those questions about like what kind of content is even being allowed to be visible on these platforms. And like there's a very good book that I think I've recommended like a million times now. it's called Searching for Black Girls. It's by Safia Noble. And it goes on to talk about like how, and when we do like a simple task of asking questions in the Google search symbol, a certain kind of images come up regarding the word Black woman, and certain connotations are associated with white bodies versus Black bodies, women versus male, as you were talking about. And so like hypervisibility of certain folks, because one of the harmful rhetorics that I've heard a lot is that there are too many immigrants in this country, or there are too many racial folks in this country or whatever. So like rhetoric around or discourse around this thing. And it is because if you are a person of color and you're using social media, your post and your profile would be like hyper visibilized. So that means that even though you might not want to see content from that content creator, but we are so few that we might just end up in algorithms, and then it will become like visible on your like newsfeed and stuff. So like you and your content become hyper visibilized because the way in which these platforms are designed. Yeah, so like that is something that I also wanted to add. But yeah, no, Robin, you were gonna say something a long time ago. Or maybe we could just have a song break right now. And then yeah. Okay, so I have a song that has a bit of a Christmas vibe. It's by an artist, a female artist. Their name is Eva. So I'm just going to play a song by them because it is Christmas and holiday vibes, and you guys, all the vibes. So let's listen to Eva.